Hey guys, thank you for coming to the first live Sup Doc episode.
Yeah, you're listening to the Sup Doc podcast. I'm Paco Romaine.
I am George Chen.
And today we're going to talk about Alexandra Pelosi's San Francisco 2.0 documentary.
Yes, and if you are here, we just screened it. If you have not seen the movie, see it or don't. We'll just talk about it and you'll get the basic idea. Guys, we're going to have three panelists coming to the stage being part of our show. Right now, there's only two, but please meet the first two panelists for our first live show. First up, running for mayor, Amy Farrah-Weiss, everyone.
Yay!
Grab a microphone. Thanks. Grab a microphone.
Have a mic.
Second guest we have booked, a legendary San Francisco comedian. You know him, you love him. Give her Kasim Bentley.
Yay!
I love that because he made on time to a podcast at last weekend video because you have been late to a few of them. But he's here now. And our last guest is a small business owner, a musician, and you might know him from renting videos here at last weekend video. Guys, make it loud for Adam Fowler.
Yeah.
And he's bringing everyone water.
Oh, look at that. Like a real champ.
Okay. Now,
hi guys.
The way this usually works is there's one guest and we talk about a doc, but this one begged a lot of opinions. This one seemed to be something I'm like, we need a lot of people to chime in on this because there's so much to talk about. Firstly, if you did not really know and you just stumbled on that movie, you might think it's a documentary about how to use Google, you guys. a lot of Google
I noticed
usage.
She never used Bing.
Yeah, like, she did not use Bing. She was still like trying to keep it local. She was not going to the Seattle thing. So just to get everyone's voices, everyone say hello and introduce yourself.
Hey, I am Amy Farrah-Weiss, and I am running for mayor of San Francisco, and I have solutions to all the hand-wringing that's going on about what do we do.
Yeah.
I'm Kasim Bentley, and I hate what's going on upstairs. Fuck Valencia Street and everyone in shorts.
Kasim always has a three-piece suit on. Guys,
I'm running for mayor too.
Oh, he won.
Just announced his candidacy.
And then Autumn.
This is Adam here talking, and I'm from upstairs, and I'm not wearing shorts. I'm missing a baseball game for this today. No, I'm happy to be
boo-hoo.
Here.
Oh, boo-hoo. Sorry. Someone might lose. Jesus Christ.
All right, so let's go around first, and every one of you individually say what you thought of this movie.
Well, this is Amy once again, and like I said... I feel like when I'm watching this, they're interviewing all of these people who are involved in San Francisco culture and politics and having commentary on the issues. And we've been living with this for years, and we know that this change has been going on. And so the question is, how do we have a proper analysis of how we got into this mess? And I didn't really hear them discuss at all anything about the global financial collapse and where we were before that. There was our unemployment rate before the global financial collapse in San Francisco was only about 3.6%. And then it rose dramatically. And then we didn't have a displacement crisis before the global financial collapse or before Ed Lee's administration. And so the policy decisions that were made for taxes and for development and economic and industry growth actually caused this displacement crisis. And we've had enough information and we've gone through these boom and bust cycles before in San Francisco, so the people who are at the helm should know better, but they don't. And so what's amazing is that, you know, I have the opportunity to be the next mayor of San Francisco and actually usher in the new paradigm that we need. And I'm hearing Robert Reich talk, and I love Robert Reich. Robert Reich, you were invited to become part of my advisory board because San Francisco...
Long-time listener, Robert Reich.
Because San Francisco is really the epicenter of income inequity in the country right now, along with New York. And we are also the epicenter of this new contract economy that whittles away at workers' rights. And so we have this great opportunity to shape that. And nobody's talking about democracy. Nobody's talking about the fact that democracy is the one tool that we have to shape these corporate interests so that we ensure that they're supporting people and the planet over profit. And we have the ability to do that working with technology. And I see that future, and I'm excited to lead us there.
All right.
Hey, that's yay, round of applause. Yeah. Okay, Kasim.
Man, what she said. No, no. No. As a native of San Francisco, and a person who I was always told that this was coming, and I didn't believe it, and now watching in real time, it was very depressing to me because I saw it three times today. And you know, I like to do things.
What was the first time?
The first time was like 9 this morning, right? And the second time was when I was washing dishes. Then I had to go do something. Then I came back and I watched it again. And I I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be honest on this podcast. Because I usually lie on most of them. Mark Maron knows. I got really upset the second time I was watching it. Because, like, I mean, to the point I was just really just like, fucking shit. Like, it felt like, well, first it was, I liked it, but I felt, though, that it was one of those documentaries where there was no solution. And you just feel like it's all going bad. It's going to be in flames, right? And I respect the director for going after the main fat cats. And the fact that she actually got all those people, you know, and that was amazing to answer the questions. But it seemed like it was a very good tech versus bad tech, or it was all bad, or gets all bad tech. And I know people who work in tech who are, some of them, you know, do make a difference.
Some of our best friends.
So I'm thinking about
work in tech.
Can someone make a shirt of that right there? It's like, only black people wear it. Some of my best friends are in tech. I mean, some of my best friends code. You know? But it is great. It was great. But I think they could have touched on a lot. I mean, I was shocked it was a half an hour. That was amazing. I thought it could have been an hour or more. Just given the fact of just all the smaller issues that are happen with that. Meaning, like, when we talk about housing, because I work in housing, right? And I see what happens with the raising of the rents and what all the and what happens to the relationship with people. Because they talked about what happens to the businesses and, you know, about how people don't care. But there is a prevailing attitude that happens where people just do feel like, well, I'm not a part of it. And, you know, I mean, I can't do anything. And that goes to a larger issue, which, because I work with these people, so I see that for the future of this city is not just all about, you know, it's not just about the industry expanding and, you know, the buildings or anything. It's really about, for me, it was more about the people and how it's leading to the destruction of people. And I kind of, that's what was scary to me, you know, because I'm just coming from like a barbershop perspective. You know, I'm just kind of, I'm coming just from what I see talking to people. And I do sense in this city that there are no, it's not just the fact that there are all these tech people. It's just the fact that it's a kind of person that's running around, because they're strangers. They haven't been here long enough to feel the empathy. You know what I mean? That where people walk around, they weren't around to see like this, you know, like the shoe guy in Mission Street turn into an ATM or something. Or they ever seen a, you know, whatever, like a center turn into like a fusion restaurant or some bullshit. You know, it's just the fact that it's going to take time. And I think that I wish the documentary could have looked at, you know, other ways. Because there are people trying to bridge the gap. You know, and that can be dangerous. But I also feel like there are other people who, how should I put this? There are people in this city who can give a great perspective of what can be like. Okay, I just rushed to get here. So I got to stop. Is that what it is? Like, there's a lot of people in this city who care. I mean, a lot. But then there's a lot of people here are so angry that they don't talk about all the time what's happening. Like people who are starting to become very violent in this city toward people in tech. I've seen fights break out. You know, I've seen people just get threatened. I've seen tech bros getting angry with other tech bros. You know what I mean? Which is kind of fun to see. You know what I mean? It's like just a bunch of collared shirts running around. But it's so funny about how the city is imploding, where people who are at certain levels of the tech world, they're not being able to afford the apartments they thought they were going to get. You know? And that was the part to me, I was like, man, if she, they could talk about that, because that's what I feel the future is going to lead to, where it's going to, I feel like it's going to burst, but no one's really ready for that. So you're going to have all these guys with these laptops running around like, I remember it was 2015, man. The good old days. Now I'm in an SRO and my friend Whiskey Pete is the only guy around here.
Kasim, I'm going to interrupt for a second. I'm going to go to Adam, but because we're going to get back to all that stuff, and we'll ask you even more questions about that. But I'm gonna throw it to Adam now.
Yeah, I saw it twice, and I felt validated when I was watching it, because we have some of those conversations upstairs at the shop every single day. But I agree with Kasim that it should have been longer. When I heard that Pelosi's kid made a documentary, it was going to be on HBO, I was looking forward to, like,
Game of Thrones, a
feature. I wanted a mini series. Yeah,
when the dragons come to us.
There's a lot to talk about, and
for people who don't know, your store is located in the heart of the Mission, which was part of the documentary.
Yeah, I was offended that we weren't featured.
Yes, you should have.
Actually,
I could have used the business. I mean, I don't know how many people are renting DVDs out there, but probably fewer and fewer.
People that love podcasts, definitely, yeah.
We've been here for 18 years,
okay,
and we've seen people come and go. We were here for that first round, and then that was a little bit more turbulent. I remember people slashing tires and SUVs getting their windows smashed, and it was a little bit more pushback against the revolution than there is now. Now it's not uncommon to see a couple of Teslas cruising down Valencia and then leaving their windows wide open. That's a call to action, you guys. it's so easy to piss into a car when the window is right open.
Hey man, how'd you get arrested, dog? Man, I went here for murder. What'd you do? He peed in a Tesla.
I peed in a Tesla. Did you electrocute?
It had a Calvin sticker on the back. I had to do what it said.
Now he's the leader of the prison gang.
Anyway, so we have these discussions upstairs every single day, and obviously my business is one of the many small businesses that's suffering due to the sea change in technology, sure, and maybe I'm in an obsolete sort of a business, but I was glad to see some of that talk in there about the neighborhood and about the artists, because this is a place that, if nothing else, at the end of the day, I'm going to be proud that we were a place where local people could work and that artists could work and musicians could work here and have a place to come back to when they got done with tour, or students work here, and just kids from the neighborhood.
People having babies.
Yeah,
here
for sure. So that's really the part that I got into mostly. And then some of it was enlightening about, you know, the disparity of income and the housing crisis and stuff, too. The stuff that Kasim knows all too well.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for Amy. So Alexandra poses the question, what is the price of change? Which seemed to be, like, I feel like, the current of the theme of the doc. What is the price of change? What is that change? And is the change for better or for worse? So I'm interested in your thoughts on that.
Well, I started a nonprofit organization called Neighbors Developing Neighbors Developing Divisadero 4 years ago, and the focus was on not just saying no to the change and wringing our hands and saying, well, the neighborhood's changing. And I've been hearing that for years on Divisadero, and now it's even more accelerated. And so instead of just saying that these things happen to us, I am a proactive person, and it doesn't sit right to me to just feel outrage or despair. I feel like I have to do what I can. And so I started that organization. It was after Ed Lee's Workforce of Economic and Workforce Development and Planning Department broke the law in two different ways to displace three local business storefronts and two longtime businesses for a Chase Bank. And so that's not something that is benefiting our neighborhood at all. And we don't need another bank, especially after the global financial collapse. Yeah. But the question was, okay, we said no to Chase Bank and we actually lost that battle because we didn't have money sitting around to sue the city in the midst of a recession. And so I just decided I'm going to figure out what I want to say yes to. And so I started what I called the YIMBY movement at that time, which is yes in my backyard. Oh. What is it that we say yes to? And the mission was to support inclusive, culturally enriching, and sustainable development that involved the neighbors that have been there in the changes rather than sitting back. And so one of those things that I look towards is how do we be involved in the planning process? We do not need another coffee shop on Divisadero, but we're getting two more. We yes. don't need one. The 99-cent store that served so many people, and it was really a hub for community because it was the people who owned it were part of the community. There was an incense shop that was next door that a guy had been there for a long time. They yeah. were getting priced
your,
out.
Your sense. Yeah.
I love that yeah. place.
Next and to the glass place.
That also got
yeah,
priced out.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the 99-cent store, now you can buy a pair of old jeans for $99.
Right, right.
And so what happened is that we talk about the new jobs that came in or that mid-market got revitalized. Mid-market got revitalized after the property owners who own that property allowed for it to be vacant and blighted for years with this thought that if we just hold out long enough, even though we're contributing to the problem, we are going to get our jackpot if we just wait long enough. That's not how the free market is supposed to work. The free market is supposed to work as I own property and I lease it or sell it at what the market will bear. I don't hold on to it to actually hurt my surrounding community and have no consequence and then actually get rewarded for it. So we have 100,000 new jobs since 2010 and our unemployment rate went down, but at what cost? How many of those jobs were given to people who were unemployed or underemployed? How many of that number of the unemployed, you know, how it went down is because people got pushed out of the city. And we're not actually doing those analysis because Ed Lee won't do them.
He won't do the analysis.
He won't do the analysis because it looks really good to say that you went from, you know, a 10% unemployment rate to, you know, under 4%. But he doesn't, once again, make that link. And we need a leader who is not just a visionary, but someone who can have a really detailed analysis of trends of how we got to where we are so we don't just throw our hands up in the air. And what Ed Lee is saying is, you know, what he said when he came into office was, oh, we need jobs, we need jobs. So we're going to work with Ron Conway to change the tax structure and we're going to give these tax right. breaks and we're not going to do anything for an environmental impact report for the tech companies like Uber and Lyft or for an environmental impact report for the Google tech buses and whatnot. It's fine. Commuting's not a crime, but you have to regulate in order to make sure that you have a balanced ecosystem.
So when you saw Ron Conway in the documentary, you're like, oh, this guy, I know a lot about this dude already. The investor who's invested in Twitter and Square mm-hmm. and Pinterest, he said Pinterest is going to make a lot of money. <Yeah. laughs>
He also
a
said
Nostradamus of tech.
He also said San Francisco is 6 square miles.
That was amazing.
Yeah, because they sold off another square mile already.
They've already annexed
it's the floating yeah. city of San
right.
Francisco.
And I guess I just want to say too, I was in Deja Vu Pizza on 16th the other day. What do you like better, Deja Vu or Serrano's?
Serrano's.
But they're really the same recipe. But anyway, so I was at Deja.
Well, hold on
our sponsor, Serrano's.
Back up a little bit.
I was at Deja Vu, you know, getting a quick slice before a panel event. And these two guys were sitting behind me, and they were talking very loudly because I think they were quite proud of their situation, which when you hear what I'm about to say, maybe you understand why. They were the exact quote, and this is real because I heard their whole conversation was, I'd rather work 5 hours a week and make $1 million when we sell rather than work 80 hours a week and make $50 million.
Oh, that's Steve. I know that. Asshole Steve. Right?
Asshole Steve. Is he talking to Chad?
And I was just sitting there thinking, you know, I count my pennies to be able to buy my slice, and here's this guy behind me. I was like, how do we work with – for me, it's not about – and I was interested in the fact that here's a tech worker, and I hate the term techie, so let me just say my skin crawls when I hear her say techie.
Why?
Because they're tech workers. They're workers. I mean, let's not, like, just like people try to generalize and say hipsters are the problem, techies are the problem. They're tech workers. And here was this guy who was saying something really important.
They're not called hip workers.
We should turn techie into like a slur.
It is
a slur.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
But does it have an ER? You know what I mean?
It's a soft ER.
Yeah.
But I was thinking when
in
I
my
was
community we can say that.
it's Tecker your word or our word?
Tecker.
Some of you, my best friends.
I can't. My teenage daughter brought a Tecker over last night.
Not in my house. There are no Teckers in my house.
My daughter's not going to marry a Twitter.
But it was interesting because that's a Tinder. Quality of life issue, right? Like, we're hearing it from the workers too, that they would rather work and be able to have better quality of life. And what's the difference between $50 million and $1 million? Once you have $1 million, I mean, you're set in so many ways. But people are talking about these huge return on investment for labor. And the thing is that we have people in San Francisco that are doing the work of heroes, which is a paraprofessional for a classroom where you're working with some of the most challenged students or people who are working in Mental Health for Progress Foundation. And they're making under $30,000 a year.
Amen. Yeah.
And that's how we have to figure out that we support everyone in this prosperity. And Ed Lee says that he sees that people are enjoying shared prosperity in ways that he hasn't seen before. Yeah. I want those special glasses of his that I can see that prosperity being shared because I don't see it.
I think those are Google prosperity glasses.
Wait, is $30,000 not a lot of money to live on?
It is for me.
That's a podcaster's question.
And George starts crying.
Yeah. Well, when you don't have a house that you feel like you're going to have a place to live indefinitely, and you're working with some of the most challenged young people in the city and having to really invest in helping them to succeed, and then you're worried about, am I going to get evicted? Yeah. And I can't afford to live in the city.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Adam, I have a question for you. I'm just wondering, how long have you lived in San Francisco?
24 years.
All right. That's a long time.
Half my life, basically.
Half of your life. So, she poses.
I still feel like a tourist, honestly.
Why is that?
Because it's that kind of place that there's a lot of, you know, I can't tell you how many people we lost to Brooklyn and Portland and
Oakland,
back to Los Angeles or whatever. It's a transitory kind of a place. It's a place where a lot of people show up and get their freak on or whatever and then move on.
Right.
So it feels a little bit, it's like that.
Well, Alexandra poses a question in this doc about San Francisco reinventing itself.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've been here long enough. Do you think San Francisco can reinvent itself to encompass what's going on?
I fear that it can't. That's the fear. Because where we're at now is we're so far removed from that first wave. It really feels like we're surrounded by it now.
Uh-huh.
And I, you know, what was I going to say? But this productivity that they were talking about, going back to what you were saying, none of those people that you mentioned probably live in the city of San Francisco, right? They probably can't afford to. They have to live in wherever, in the East Bay or down in Daly City. And to hear that guy in the film talk about all the jobs, you know, maybe some, you know, contractor and kind of jobs that are building these high rises, but those people probably don't live here either, really, right?
Right.
So this is just becoming a big condominium, it feels like.
Well, see, okay, so here's the thing, because I'm being from here my whole life, and I've always thought about this idea that San Francisco is like a gas station pit stop, you know what I mean? just with sourdough bread and gets here, and that people come here. I went to State College, I noticed it, I saw this happen where people come here for a while, and this is when I thought this when I was 18 to 38 now, where I was just like, people come here, and they don't think about this like when people go to New York or maybe LA where there's a huge industry, and the industry's meaning like, you know, some people, you know, whether it be film or whether it be working as a doctor, San Francisco is just one of those cities where you just come and stay for a while, and you know, for the people that are in the tech industry, they don't you know, they don't see that because they like they said, like I said, people were working down Silicon Valley. They come up here because they didn't want to be down that hot ass barren wasteland that it is. So they got them a double decker bus and they brought them up here so they could be near the water and they could eat pad thai and all that kind of shit and meet some interracial person. Right? And it's there. And it's just there. You know? And but that's the thing that we need to look at. I wish the documentary could look at if it was longer. But for looking at the people, the leaders of the city, where there is a mentality here, and how do we counteract that, where you do want to make people stay? Because the people that do stay have an incredible amount of money, and I know they can stay because they have babies, right? And because you see a white woman with a baby and a Mexican woman next to her, she's going to be here for a while, right? So they're there, and it's like, and I just think that's more of a bigger problem we have. But for the techies that come here, you know, sometimes we have to look at the people we're dealing with, because I meet people that work at startups, right? I visit them, and I understand why some of these people don't understand any of these problems. Because when you go to a startup, it's like seeing a bunch of comedians, a bunch of ugly dudes, right? They have never been. They just got here. They don't know what they're doing. They look like they should be under a bridge. And they're just in front of a computer all day. They're a blanket. They're white as binder paper. And they just sit down there. And they have no social skills. And all they get to think about, type, and all that all day. So when you're dealing in that world, when you're dealing in that world of startups, I'm not for them, but when you go visit them and you haven't had breakfast, that is an amazing place. They have eight kinds of muesli, man. You know what I mean? Like with real shit in it. And you're sitting up there like eating granola made from a woman that lives 18 blocks away. And you're sitting down there and you're like, I get it why they're not. Their mind, it's like if they were doing it, it's like all they're getting in their teleprompter is just like, you know, just do the information. Do the work. And when they go home, these people, I meet them and hang out with them. So like, they are tired. They go home, they go and, you know.
Yeah,
and
I've noticed that. The city shuts down much earlier now because these people come back from that long two-hour commute or whatever after working a 12-hour day. And then it just shuts down.
Netflix and chill.
Alone. Netflix and chill and cry.
Like, sorry to use the N word down here. Just Netflix and the video store guys.
Oh, yeah,
sorry.
Man, you're getting a little controversial today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
But it does happen where you have these people and they're trying to build this, you know, I work in housing and I meet people in property management and I see their wheels turning and they try to give these guys all this excitement and everything. So a lot of these guys are just walking around. And mind you, some of these guys get out of college. They have these huge heads and these huge brains, look like light bulbs, and they're around here. And they're not thinking about, some of them do, but a lot of them are just, They're just in this haze, and they understand that, oh, my God, an organic bicycle shop opened up. You know what I mean? Or an artisanal barber shop. I can get an $80 haircut thing, and I can go to work, and I can meet some person. It's like there's no one waking up. There's not a lot of activists in these areas of interest. They're like sitting there like, wake up. You know, not say leave the job, but also let's try to change your mind. But there are some people that, and I wish the documentary could focus on those people that can see both sides of the issue. You
yeah.
know?
Like me.
Yeah.
Amy.
Yeah. We need a seat.
Because I actually was a mediator last night on the vote 1-2-3 to replace Ed Lee page. Just want to let you know, go to Facebook, talking about tech. You can go to
Facebook.
Vote 1-2-3 to replace Ed Lee. If you're not part of the group right now, please do it. And so there was, I entered in about comment 50, which, you know, that's a really good thread if it's getting down to 50. Yeah. And it was really intense. And I actually entered into it because one of the people in the group messaged me and he said, I'm about to be out of your group and I don't want to vote for you or be part of anything like this because I work in tech and I can't believe I'm being attacked this way. And so I said, hold on. Let me get in there. Let me see what's going on. So I went through the thread and he was being viciously attacked as a tech worker. And so I actually came into it and said, I'm going to take a stand for Ken. And I'm going to let you know that there are, you know, it's not just tech workers that come into our community and don't engage. This is an issue across the board with a lot of different new transplants to San Francisco. And so because we live in a democracy, this is our community, we have to figure out what the guidelines are and how we want to address this. And I personally want engineers and people who can code and be part of the system to evolve San Francisco, not disrupt it. I want people to come and evolve it with their skills. And so I said this in a couple different ways coming to his defense. And once I said that, nobody was standing up for Ken. Poor guy. And he was having a hard time. But when I came in there and said that, immediately, like 10 likes, people were liking what I was saying. And so I think people want someone like me to be able to say, you know, we can work together. We can take these different groups that seemingly are polarized and help them to support the greater good. But it's the tech corporations that are going unchecked and are given a green light by our current administration to come in and do that are the issue. And it's not that they're necessarily the issue. It's that they're not realizing that they know systems thinking. They know what a healthy ecosystem is. They were all trained. Most of the people that are involved in these companies are people who are, you know, I'm 38. They're people who are around my age. We got trained to think in this way. So they know what happened. They know what it's called when something grows to the extent and replicates itself to a point where it kills its organism. It's called the cancer. They don't want to be cancer. They want to be nourishment. They want to be creating tools that support. And so it's just a matter of being able to control that growth.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Like, it's sort of this idea that, like, people, instead of, like, targeting a Ken, like, you don't know what side Ken is on necessarily, right? And you want to make him on your side, if anything. And that's, like, I see what you're saying with that. Do you guys have a vote 123 Reddit?
Do you want to make it?
No, I'm not going to do it. Going back to the film.
Then why would say it? Then why would you say it?
I don't know.
It's a rabble rouser on here.
Hey, do you have like
democracy is not a spectator sport.
It's true. Get involved or get the fuck out.
What do you have to say about that, George?
I live in Oakland, guys. Which is the real San Francisco 2.0.
Oh, snap. Shit. Oakland has old people and kids.
Yeah, that's true. I was thinking of that quote from Bernard Forte. The guy who worked at Yahoo in the Chronicle building. I think they already are out of the Chronicle building. And it actually got a huge laugh from the whole audience when he said, there are no old people or kids here. This is pretty amazing. Which made me think, going back to the film, there was people I kind of want to hear more from. I know it was only an hour-long, 40-minute film. I thought there could have been, a whole, arc. There could have been, a mini-series about this. Two people I thought they could have used more of were the woman that worked in the activist in housing in Hunters Point. There was Sion Hill. I don't know if that's the right way to pronounce it. And then there was the kid whose mom, they tried to kick this kid and his mom
that
out
guy
of her
was
home
great
for $2,000. And he was so he was so compelling and had so much great things to say. And was he just handled it so well, being interviewed by a Pelosi. Daniel Cozio is his name. I'm I wish we could have gotten him for a panel or something like that. Not that you guys aren't great, but is there anyone that you wanted to hear more from?
Some of the owners of these companies. There was that guy in the beginning who had,
British guy?
He sold Bebo?
Bebo, yeah.
He looked that guy looked like every bad guy in every Bond movie.
In every Bond,
Die Hard or something. That guy, just the fact he's
poison, you're drinking it.
I'm getting sleepy.
Do you have a cat? Maybe a swivel chair?
Oh, you know, oh my God. Yeah. You know he has a cat.
He has a cat app. That's what he's got.
He just passed the phone.
We bought it back for $1 million.
He just swipe right on your cat app for a different cat.
But these owners, I mean, because we got a good glimpse of who they are.
Monkey Inferno? Is that the name of this company? That's great. Monkey Inferno is like a Bond villain, pretty much. Yeah. Monkey Inferno, Bond, you will pass through the monkeys with a million typewriters writing your contract.
But I think that the people that you did bring up were very compelling figures, especially when we talked about the baby, because that's when I was in high school. I remember I was at the barbershop, and I was there where all things happen. And I was sitting there, and this older brother was talking about how he had heard a report. He was dealing in housing and city planning and all that stuff, but he was an activist in the Bayview. And he's like, he had this report saying it was a 20-year plan to develop the Bayview. And it was just, and it talked about technology, but this has been, you know, what he just basically said was this, it's going to happen. Once they've been talking about the light rail for years and redeveloping and everything. But I just think that for the baby, it's very scary because, you know, we've all heard about what the voucher programs they had in the 40s, the 50s, and every decade it was some way to get poor people and brown people out of here. But with the Bayview being redeveloped like this, and you never hear about where these people are being sent to, but you see these huge places being built, and I hate to say it, I'm not a hater, but I'm just trying to be. I'm a realist.
What? You're not a hater?
I mean, when it comes to certain things, George. Wow, is this what you brought me on here?
The roast has been roasted.
Edit that out. All right, but. Really, Jeremy? Don't you got some drinks to make or something like that? Jesus Christ. You Isaac from the Love Boat over there? Jesus Christ. It's all attacking me.
I'm on your side.
Did you find this podcast? No, no.
We wanted to bring you in to show everybody what a black person looks like.
But seriously, all right? No, but understand is that, like, when we talk about what's happening with tech, and I know I definitely feel that it's going to get a lot worse for any significant changes we've made. But for people here, and you see about, you know, when you have people moving here and where you want to stay, you know, just be educated of the fact that, yeah, everything does come at a cost. And you see what's happening to Bayview. It's huge because sometimes the bigger things that happen is that they'll move people out and they'll do it. And the methods they do it. It almost seems criminal where I've heard about families. I'm like, what happened to Ms. Johnson, Mom? Oh, did you hear? So-and-so came in, gave her a check for $900,000, and now she lives in Antioch next to what she thought would be good, but Ray Ray lives out there, and it's the same things. And all because some 20-year-old tech guy with $2 million in the bank wants to have a high-level apartment with a crystal, whatever, you know, with a chandelier. And it's like, it's going to keep happening, and I guess for a lot of us, and what's going to happen, those rents are going to get higher and higher and higher. Because I talked to those tech people, and the whole thing happened when, like, the Bebo guy, when they got bought out. And all this stuff happens all the time. If you're savvy enough at the Battery and you can buy enough drinks for some old asshole, you can sell any idea. You'd be like, shoelace sap, you know what I mean? And it's like, oh, I think that makes sense, you know what I mean?
Take my money now.
And he's like handing over his old man. That keeps happening. And that's why I think it's going to burst because what one guy told me at this one bar, he was saying that he sees that he's meeting all these bosses and they're having the same gripes where they invest in some app or some startup and it goes belly up. And now they're starting to see, like, these ideas are ridiculous. You know what I mean? And then it's just, but a lot of these guys, they're just going to leave. Yeah. And you're going to be stuck with all these broke kids and these companies' offices. Yeah. But then all these property managers and these development companies, they're still going to keep the money out because these guys, I go to property manager offices, and when they start getting money, they go crazy. It's like a kid going to an NBA. You know what I mean? It's the diamonds and leathers and all that stuff. And they got to keep the lights on. So they're going to keep that two-bedroom at $4,600. You know what I mean? And so that's why I'm saying that for a lot of people out there, when they move here, it's like, look, I know you want the San Francisco experience, but don't be greedy. Don't go to the Fillmore Center or some smaller mom and pop and say, oh, you know, it's really $1,800. Don't say, I'll give you $2,100. And if you lose it, you already got money in the bank. Go somewhere else. You know what I mean? It's like, don't be an asshole.
I just want to say really quick, my friend Jason is here, and he's a teacher. And what's so great, like, he got priced out of San Francisco when he was looking for a place to live, so he moved to Oakland. But there were a lot of people that were vying for that apartment. And what was so special to me is that the property owner, when he found out that Jason was a teacher, he said, "Oh, teacher." And he wrote down teacher on the application. And he gave it to him at an amazing price near Lake Merritt. And that's
the
thing.
Do you need a roommate?
He's already got one and a son. Yeah. And so the idea is that people always have the ability to make decisions. And I think that's what you're getting at.
Yeah.
You always have the choice. And I lived in a place that I was actually trying to get the community land trust to help us purchase because it was for sale. And I was this in-between between the landlord and the tenants and trying to figure out a way that we could stay there, because not only was this a place that for 10 years, 9 people had lived in that are low income, artists, teachers, so on and so forth, but Mother Teresa had been there actually in the building.
What?
Because it was a hospice for men who had HIV and AIDS in the 80s and 90s. And if we can't save this little piece of history, what can we save? But it was Mayor Lee's housing office that said, "Oh, well, we can't actually lend you the money yet through this program because we're going to follow HUD guidelines." So they were just behind the times for a year. But the people came in. I wasn't actually dressed yet. I was in my room, and there were the real estate person was coming to show the place to a bunch of people, and they knocked on my door, and I said, "Oh, I'm not dressed." And they said, "Well, we want to come in. And I was, "Why do you want to come in here? Because there's 9 people living up here already. I think you're buying this building to move into the bottom." But I came out and I said, "If you purchase this place, you are literally part of the problem of our times. If you come in and purchase this place and then you displace 9 people." And what did they do? They purchased this place. And what was so ironic about it is that the kids that moved in to the bottom floor had been displaced from the mission. Their parents bought the place. They moved the son and his wife into the bottom floor. The daughter moved in upstairs, and one person to displace 9 people. And they did it knowingly. And so they're part of this issue. So I just tell that story because there's always choice.
The daughter
always
might not
choice.
Have even gone up there. That happens all the time.
Yeah.
Right.
Move in, right.
I have a question for Adam. You are not only a small business owner, but also you're a musician. I'm just wondering, watching that, one of the things that stood out is I really wish you'd talk to some comedians, some artists, some musicians at length in this documentary. But what do you think? Is there a way to keep the creative pool going in this city if everyone's being displaced?
A lot of people left. I can't tell you how many people left. That, they come in, they just tap out. They go, "Well, I could have an apartment in
Portland,
even Los Angeles, yeah, for the money that I'm paying for my studio."
Right.
Hunter's Point or wherever it is. So that there's an aesthetic thing, artists, indigenous artists, people that are from here certainly, but also the people that come here to do their musical thing or their artistic thing, they would come in and they would be like, "I'm really trying to stay here. How am I going to do this? I just got Ellis acted, or there's an owner move-in happening. I'm out of here. I can't afford to do it." But at this point, it's more like, why would I want to be here? Mm. Why would I want to be in this environment? The aesthetic, the thing that I came here for, is all but gone.
Always going to be a beautiful city.
No, it's
I
certainly.
Love this city.
No, it's okay. Great. It's great. But it's a tough racket. Mm-hmm. And so I'm hearing from people like, "Well, not only am I going to get more for my money elsewhere, but I'm into the scene over there more so than here, because all the clubs shut down. They turned into sports bars or, or whatever it is."
But what's funny is that I've always said this to a lot of friends of mine who are in the arts, is that, stress affects progress, right? And I've seen people who, when just like I say in the 90s or early 2000s, you can afford to stay here. I've always felt the art was better, the music was better, dance was better, everything, and even the venues we had. And then when you see people move, like people who are truly talented, I'm not even going to go in names, but when you see them move out and to see the people are left, let's say for comedy, the people that can do comedy, that can live here, and really live here are shitty, right? They are actually shitty. If you can afford
to
do...
Why are you applauding?
Because you know, you've seen improv shows, you know what I mean? Just like, give me an idea, kill yourself, you know what I mean? Jesus Christ.
Yes,
it's like you can afford all these $300, $600 a month college classes and all that stuff. You're not that good, you know what I mean? It's just, and that happens, even with bands, even with people. There's been so many times I've waited to have a show start because some bunch of 40s guys in their 30s is over the hill, not good, but they can afford some real equipment and they're doing some kind of Styx cover band. You know what I mean? And it's like, I gotta sit through this shit? Nah, man. It's like, where? Then I gotta call my friends who live in New York just to get a good laugh. And it's like, it's gonna keep happening. Mm. And even when I see visual art, I went to school for art. I noticed all the people that were great artists that were trying to. I guess I saw so many great works. Now it's like really interesting, accessible art. You know what I mean? Like easy made art. And it's just all these things. Not saying it's bad, but it just changes the aesthetics of the city. And I remember what it once was. And it makes me really depressed. But there still is great art and there still is beauty in the city. And there are certain things that are developing that makes it worth staying here. It's just like, it's just when you're walking through, it's just, you know, there's more rocks in the road. You know what I mean? So.
I have a question. If Alexandra had interviewed you, mm-hmm. which she should have, or anyone who's running against Mara Lee just for an opposing position, what would you had said to her if she would say, if and when you are elected, what can you do to stem the tide of what's happening? Like, do you have a plan or a solution?
Sure. Well, one thing is that we have to look at this as a regional ecosystem that we live in, and then we have 9 counties within this Bay Area ecosystem. And when we see what's happening in Cupertino, where the old mall, I used to go to the mall at when I was a teenager, Valco Mall.
Valco.
Yeah, it's being torn down. It failed. And so what they're doing, this is right by the new Apple headquarters, that donut headquarters, and they're going to be building some new office space right by it. And so I talked to Kim Mai Cutler of TechCrunch, and she pointed out to me that they're going to be putting 20,000 new jobs estimated to go into Cupertino in that site, and with Apple as well. But do you know how much housing that they're actually required through? It's called the, if you want to be a policy wonk, here's a couple terms that'll make you really popular at these parties: ABAG, the Associated Bay Area Governments, and RENA, the Regional Housing Needs Assessment. And so ABAG's RENA for Cupertino, they say that you have to build in Cupertino is how much? We have 20,000 new jobs, 1,000 new units is what they're required to do, and they're doing more than that. They're doing 1,400.
Oh.
And so what we have to what we have to see is there's these links, and so you can't grow industry and jobs. And in San Francisco, we're a leader in that because in 1986, some righteous activists actually did the hard work to pass Prop M, which limits the amount of office space you can grow. So only every year you can only add 875,000 square feet of office space, and then it gets pooled up. So do you know how much office space that developers want to build in San Francisco right now? Like 9 million square feet, and they're only allowed to build a certain amount because of Prop M. And so we have to be able to take some of that San Francisco logic, and it's just pure logic, it's reasonable, and apply that to the regional approach. But then I have an idea, because, you know, I sat down and said, I need to figure out solutions. I can't just be saying, like, there's a housing issue. So, Mayor Lee is really excited about this idea that, you know, 30,000 new units are in the pipeline right now to be built. And a lot of those are through Lennar at Hunters Point and Bayview. And then they also are tearing down a lot of rent-controlled property that is over by San Francisco State, which was really controversial. And they're going to build some new housing there. But what could we do to build housing for the people? That's the question, right? Mm-hmm. And so, and that actually benefits people. So, I don't know if you know the term additional dwelling unit, but In San Francisco, the planning department assessed all of the existing parcels in the city and found that 37,000 of these parcels have the ability to have one or more additional dwelling units built. So maybe, you know, sometimes when you convert a garage or you have an apartment building that has a first floor that has a lot of space,
is that
could
in-law
be added
thing from a couple of years ago?
Well, it's within the building envelope. Yeah, right. So it's an in-law or an additional dwelling unit.
There was a stock of those places.
Right, so there's 37,000. And so what we can do is we can start off in Bayview, Hunters Point, or Fillmore and work with African-American homeowners that are having a hard time making ends meet. And we can say to them, hey, we know that you can have an additional dwelling unit in your property. What we will do is we will provide the financing, the construction, and the design, and we will provide that to you if you agree to rent to someone in our registry of San Francisco workers at 30% or less of their income. And so right there, and it's not a handout, it's a loan that we get back. And they're going to be making money as a property owner after, you know, a few years. It costs $50,000 to $250,000 to add an additional dwelling unit to build one. And that's local jobs. I just met this guy in the street today at Sunday Streets, and he just graduated from a program called City Build. And they teach you construction skills. So what we could be doing is say it's 100% local hire for these additional dwelling units. And it, like I said, it's only $50,000 to $250,000 to build. You know how much it costs for a new unit to be developed? $500,000 to $700,000. So when we're talking about this $350 million that we're going to get from Prop A, everybody vote yes on Prop A. But if Ed Lee becomes mayor, I'm a little dubious about how that gets spent. Because it's only going to bring like 1,000 units. But if we did it my way, it would bring quite a few more, and it would be a loan. It wouldn't actually be having to invest in something that's not going to come back to us. Solutions.
Yeah. Yay. And this is like an idea that could even work outside of San Francisco for other cities. They could listen to this podcast and be like, oh, we're going to take Amy's idea and apply it in like Houston or something.
That's right. No.
But you know, that idea makes a lot of sense because there's a nonprofit. It's a program called Christmas in July, Christmas in April, where if you are deemed like low income or fit the qualifications, they'll have these workers come over and they'll make all these modifications. Like my grandpa's house, they did that, and they took it from the 40s and made it up like current and everything. Mm-hmm. And then I used to work at risk youth, so there's all these continuation school programs, and there'd be one in like Treasure Island and one here. There's one here in the Tenderloin where they teach youth and people who are fit for the program construction skills, you know what I mean? And there's a bunch of those kind of programs around there here, but I think that does make a lot of sense because you're supporting the economy, you're supporting the community, and it's, and once again, you're saving people's housing, so I think it makes plenty of sense, you know.
What about the Airbnb thing? Where are you on that?
Prop F plus Airbnb equals Fairbnb.
Oh, hey. Look what she did.
Came up with that one myself.
And it rhymed. I think that one's going to go, man.
I like to rhyme. So, hip hop the vote. They made fun of me last night for saying hip hop the vote.
Yeah, I would
have
too.
We were on a panel together last night, too, actually.
Oh, that's cute.
But Airbnb,
that's cute.
We're new panel mates.
I know.
And I gave him a challenge to be part of the work to support this homeless initiative that I have once I become mayor.
Oh,
and it sounds like you accepted.
I did.
Yeah.
Can't edit that out. Right? That was
good. Right. And so with Airbnb, what's happening, they're trying to mislead us, and they have these huge billboards with people with binoculars and, oh, your neighbor's going to spy on you. It's 100% false, because if we have this regulation in place, it will cut down on neighbors spying on you, because we will have the data to know whether or not people are actually registered with the city. And what happened the other day, you know, I was, me and Jason were going back to my house, and I keep seeing these people with suitcases rolling up and going to a lockbox right two doors up. And so what happened, I went up to them and I said, oh, well, you know, do you know if the person that you're Airbnb-ing from lives in San Francisco? Because to be legal, you have to actually live in the unit in San Francisco. And they said, oh, no, she lives in Santa Cruz. And I said, oh, that's interesting. I'm running for mayor. And this is a really interesting dilemma that we're facing.
Here, take a pin.
And they were from England. And I said, you're probably facing this where you live, too. And they said, yes. And so we just have to help people make these connections between their actions and the impacts.
Right.
All right, well, we're running low on time. If anyone had, we can have time for one or two questions from the audience if you want to come up to the mic.
Didn't you have something to say?
Me?
Yeah, you said something.
Do you want to come to the mic? We need
it
on the mic.
My neighbors now because there is no regulation for Airbnb. So I spy on the people with the rolly suitcases and trying to find out where I can file complaints about where all my neighbors are getting pushed out and all that.
Yeah. It's currently a complaint driven process, and we want to go. And I was there when Scott Sanchez, the planning administrator, zoning administrator, he said in front of the whole board of supervisors, we can't get this data without a subpoena to Airbnb. We can't do our job without this data. And then what was interesting is they all work at the pleasure of the mayor or whatever, the discretion of the mayor, right? And so if he's
displeased... Is that a new club opening?
At the Battery.
I think Shrimp Boy pleasures the mayor.
Her Majesty's request.
And so, you know, they weren't allowed to speak their truth. And if I'm mayor, people can do analysis and they can look at data and they can tell me whatever the data is showing, and we will work to actually figure out the solution. It won't be that I'm working as a lawyer on behalf of these corporations, which is what Lee is doing now. He got trained as a lawyer to present the side that was paying him, and that's what he's doing now. He's actually being a corporate lawyer. He started off as a tenants' rights lawyer, and he's become a corporate lawyer.
Does anyone else have a question for Kasim, Adam, or Amy?
Or a statement.
Or a statement.
Oh, where do we file those complaints? Where we see a rolling suitcase? Oh,
yeah. It's the planning department. Yeah, now they have an office of short-term rentals, but it's just an office where you have to twiddle your thumbs and think, how do we actually enforce the law? It's just it's not like they're going to actually be able to enforce
what
it.
Those guys spent like over $8 million or something to...
Yes.
Right,
they're spending $8 million to defeat Prop
to
F.
Defeat Prop.
And you know, to be fair, if I were to write Prop F myself, and I wish there was more of a participatory process in propositions in San Francisco. Say what you will about Scott Wiener, but one of the things that he did did ask for it was packed with a few different things. But he was saying, you know, if you have a proposition that you want to put forward in San Francisco, there should be a point where you have to bring it before the people, and they have an ability to give feedback, and then you don't have to take it or incorporate it; you just have to hear it. Which I would have liked that to happen, because I actually reached out to the people who were writing Prop F, and I wanted to be part of it, but they didn't let me. And so I think that if this is going to be on the ballot, we should have the people be able to give feedback. But what I would have done is just said, we need the data. We need the data on the nights hosted, and we need Airbnb to be held accountable for not being able to let hosts use their platform unless they have proof of registry. Those very simple things, but there are a lot of things in this, and quite frankly, Airbnb deserves it, and the city deserves that there are these harsher restrictions that are involved in Airbnb in Prop F, because the Board of Supervisors got sold out to Airbnb, and the mayor got sold out to Airbnb.
Yeah, and we're in a housing crisis.
Now they have to deal with it.
All right, well, we're going to wrap it up on that. Let's give you guys some time to just tell people where they can find you online. So if you want to go, Amy.
Yeah, so on Facebook, we have almost 8,000 members as of today that have joined Vote 123 to Replace Ed Lee. It's about tripled in the last 2 weeks, which is amazing. Please be part of it and invite all your friends to join, because believe it or not, all we need, this is pathetic, but all we need to win in San Francisco, the mayor's race, is 75,000 votes. And so we are definitely on our way there, to the point where Ed Lee is actually starting to attack my campaign in some underhanded ways, because he's threatened, and he should be, because we're going to win this. Yeah. And I've aligned with two other mayoral candidates who are also people-powered, because we have ranked choice voting in San Francisco. So we're saying vote 1, 2, 3 to replace Ed Lee, myself, Francisco Herrera, and Stuart Shuffman. And my particular campaign site is thinktwicevoteweiss.com.
Fantastic. Thank you. Kasim?
You can find me on all social media, Kasim Bentley. And for everyone here, and everyone's going to listen to the podcast. You know, I know a lot of times people feel they can't really do anything because they think it has to be a big thing. But some of the things you can do are, you know, you can write your local paper, like SF Weekly, the popular blog. You can attend these meetings. You can, you know, if you see something, say something. And also just keep, you know, I mean, see something, say something, like, share it. What are you laughing at? All right there. And then if you, and also vote. Because a lot of people come to these events and they don't do anything and just vote, you know? So just contribute. So there you go.
All right. Thank you, sir. Adam? All right.
You can find me upstairs.
Rent a video.
And I encourage you to do that, too. And sort of on the heels of what Kasim said, like, you know, there's a bookstore down the street. Yeah. Like, you might save $4 if you get it on Amazon, but fuck that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they're not employing anybody anyway, and those guys are cool down there. And so, like, let's be a part of this community. Like, you can't go online to lostweekendvideo.com and have a discussion. You know, you can't argue, like, who's better, P.T. Anderson or Wes Anderson. You got to come upstairs and talk shit with us.
Jeremy will
and then play
you.
Our jukebox. And play with our, you know, 80s arcade games. And be a part of this fucking community.
And there's a record store, too.
Yeah, there's a record store up there now that has vinyl records. So, like, let's remember what it's like to be a human being and have a face-to-face conversation.
Yes. Nice.
Yeah.
All right, guys. George and I want to say thank you guys for coming out at our first SupDoc Live podcast. You can find us at SupDoc Podcast at Twitter and SupDocPodcast.com online.
And we are a complaint-driven system also.
We are. Yes.
Right. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Thanks.